Welcome back to Copper Country Today. We are heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102.3. We're brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer and healthier lives. I'm talking with Jennifer Lynn, who is the superintendent of the Baraga School District, also is the principal of their K-2 early elementary grades in Baraga. And we're doing this interview in my studio in Baraga, so this is in Lawrence. If this sounds a little bit different than the show normally does, you don't need to adjust your radio. We are in what Representative Gary Peters calls my attic. It's not really quite an attic. It's sort of almost kind of an attic. We're talking about the trip that Jennifer made along with a number of teachers and some other school administrators from the Copper Country to Finland a few weeks ago to observe the school district there. You mentioned something, Jennifer, early on that I really would like to focus on for a few minutes, and that is the lack of standardized testing in Finland. Standardized testing has been such a hot topic here in the United States. I have talked with very few educators who like it. I've talked with politicians who say they don't like it, but they keep requiring it. Mm-hmm. How do they gauge the progress of their students if they don't use some kind of testing?
One of the themes that kept coming up every place we went, and even before when we were at FinFest, was there is a high level of trust in their culture of their teachers and their education system. So I think it does come somewhat back to that.
Is it safe to say that they value teachers in their society perhaps more highly than we do?
I'm cautious with comparisons, but they do value, they do have an extremely high value of their teachers in Finland, and that's why it's a career of choice in Finland.
Yeah, I know they really kind of pull the cream of the crop off the top
they do.
Of their school yes. students and send them the best become teachers.
Only 10% of the top 10% of the upper secondary graduates apply to go on for teacher training, and then only 10% of them get accepted into teacher training programs. So they do have the cream of the crop going in. They also require, prior to going into a school, into a classroom, that the teacher has a master's degree from a research-based university.
So you can't even start teaching with a bachelor's degree.
Correct. So you start with a master's degree in the once you get up into the compulsory years, not in the preschool years. You can have a bachelor's degree there. And it's from an academic institution. And this was part of their reform movement, was to increase the professionalization of the teaching job. And so and because of the high level of respect that teachers get, it's a desirable career. Pay is in when they work out the, you know, the formulas trying to make comparisons. It's fairly comparable to our area, but again, the level of respect that's given to the teachers and the level of trust and autonomy. Teachers have a master's that's research based. And the culture as a whole trusts that they are going to make appropriate professional decisions and instructional decisions for the students. And so they don't have to, you know, measure with these standardized tests, because our standardized tests have evolved into in the United States, I believe, have evolved into part of our accountability system. And so there isn't that sense of need for the teachers accounting through a standardized tool for that, because they just believe that their teachers have been highly trained and are doing well. And well, clearly their international scores are indicating that things are fine, and they have one of the highest literacy rates in the world and highest level of adult skills. So they trust their teachers, and they don't have to take a measurement, you know, once a year on these standardized scales.
And because we use these to judge our kids, We use these to judge the effectiveness of our teachers. We use these to judge the effectiveness of the school. We use these to judge the effectiveness of the school district. We rely on these tests heavily. Would it be possible for us to turn around and move away from them?
I think that would be a direction that we probably need. I hope it would be a place that we can go, but I think we need to go back to why do we not have the trust that in our system, and how do we rebuild trust, and how do we develop that within our culture, within the community, with our legislators, with our families. So I think it could, but Finland took many decades for reform. And I think, you know, when we talk about school reform, and which is good, and I think we know that we need to reform in our country, and we need to, you know, raise the standard of that conversation in our country. Standardized tests may not be the most effective use of our resources either, because we spend billions and billions of dollars on these tests, and we're using instructional time to give them, and they may standardize the instruction as well. So teachers feel that they're tied to the test as opposed to being tied to the student.
You would not have, for example, in the classroom here, the creativity that they have in Finland to put together Phenomenon Week.
I also think we can move trust into the realm of, if they can be creative in Finland and have strong outcomes, that we can take the risk and be creative in our classrooms and still get strong outcomes on those. So that even if the test is there, if we can trust ourselves as professionals and reassure our families and our communities that by being creative and focusing on individual student needs and their socialization, that's another, and their wellness, very healthy, a lot of focus on health and wellness, that the test scores will follow. So rather than putting the test in front of us, that we put the student in front of us, and the test scores will follow. And yeah, I think there's an internal trust.
The test scores will be a healthy byproduct of a good educational direction.
But when the test scores are used in a demeaning or threatening manner, that breaks down trust. So I think putting assessments where, you know, in the place that they're the most effective and the most helpful is is something we should consider. Do we have good tests? Are they being used for the right purposes? So I don't think we'll totally get away from that in our country. And I think accountability is something that, you know, we don't need to wipe off the map. That's part of trust building too. So whatever it takes for us to start feeling confident again in our teachers as a whole. And I'm talking very broad in general. I know in our communities in this area, there is a high level of trust, and we do have very strong relationships within our communities in the Copper Country and in Veriga County. So again, I don't want to overgeneralize, which is always a risk to overgeneralize.
You also talked a little while ago about the way that the teachers and the staff interact and work together. Is that significantly different than what we have here?
Because I know my buildings and my teachers, I can only speak to them. And I would say the culture of the teachers in Veriga is highly collaborative. I think resource-wise, we always feel like we don't have enough time to do the level of collaboration that we would like to do. And that is a structural difference than over in Finland. They do provide more time for teacher collaboration. So I think, you know, the more we can provide those resources, which do come down to, dollars and cents, the more we can provide time resources for teachers to collaborate. I do think that is part of our culture in my buildings with my teachers. As a superintendent in the Copper Country ISD, I also feel that that is something that occurs across school districts, between school districts. So I do think when we talk about what do I see, how do I see the Finnish culture, what we saw over there, and do we have those traits here? I would say we do. I think we have those, that spirit in us here.
Does the existing system allow for that kind of creativity? And again, kind of getting back to the sometimes we get the feeling we have to teach to the test, the standardized test coming up, and the teacher would say, well, maybe I better not be able to be trying this experiment because I could get burned. Does that happen?
It may happen. I think that's a sense that you hear from people, and yet I see teachers being creative every day I walk into the school. So and that's another nice thing about going to another country or culture and then reflecting back. You learn to appreciate, you have an appreciation for, hey, we are, you know, we're doing okay. And we are, you know, it's very validating. I didn't see teaching that was, you know, totally different than what I see our teachers here doing. We do have very creative teachers. We saw a lot of very engaging types of teaching and learning over there that I know teachers here want the time to do. So I think the structure of the system is, it's the time factor. How much time do we have to prep and do all of the, that accountability system again? We have so much paperwork and accounting to do and to the system. Sometimes that takes our time away from being creative because you're filling out more reports. We fill out more reports. We take more tests. We do a lot of things that invade on that creative instructional time.
So the child starts school at age 7. Mm-hmm. And goes through elementary, what we would call middle school, and into the early years of high school. You did say that once they make that choice between the vocational and the what college
academic,
prep,
academic,
university, yep, mm-hmm. we would call it, that they have a certain amount of flexibility then to change that choice. How do they make that choice in the first place? Do they get some counseling? Are there people there who are saying, you know, this would be a good option for you, that would be a good option?
Yeah, in fact, every school is required to have that kind of guidance counseling for the students. So that is structurally within the system. Every school has a guidance counselor. Every school has a social worker. There are those supports there. So they do get a lot of counsel in that direction. And we did get to visit the Hagahelia, which is the University of Applied Sciences in Helsinki. So we did get to go to one of their vocational schools. We went there for two different activities. One was a project. Their whole curriculum is based on project-based learning, which is a problem-solving model. Their students throughout their years there will be given problems in their field, and they're given the resources of theories, but then they have to go out and actually develop a project that solves the problem. So we went on a gamified activity where we needed to go into Helsinki and chase a bunch of young adults around Helsinki while they were with their iPads being sent to different locations to do marketing activities and submit their work to somebody at, you know, the central, you know, central intelligence who told them where to go next. And by the time they got there, they had feedback from their first activity. And
these are kids who are how old?
This would be University of Applied Science. So this would be their post-secondary. So, you know, they actually start at about 19. So okay. I would say, and the group I was with was close to the end of their marketing program. So they were early 20s.
Jennifer Lynn is my guest on Copper Country today. She's the superintendent of the Baraga School District, was one of a group of educators who recently visited Finland, a visit that came out of the education symposium that was held as part of FinFest last summer here in the Copper Country and was arranged through Finlandia University. So you went, you saw, you came back.
Now we're back.
Now,
now what?
Now what? Well, yeah, that's precisely it. Yeah. What do you do now? Were there concrete ideas that you came back with that you said this would work in my school?
Well, actually, one of my teachers was with me, Mrs. Vanilla. She teaches fourth grade, and the first day back, she had all her kids take their shoes off. Because actually,
excuse me?
Yeah, yeah. So, in the preschool, in the early grades, and then it's kind of optional, is the kids actually take their shoes off and they walk around school in their socks, because it's important there that students feel comfortable in their learning environment. So, not that that's a great, you know, that's going to, you know, change the world, but yeah, I think there were some things that people are coming back more inspired about. And one of the things that we will be doing is putting together some professional development activities to share with other educators in the area. So it's still solidifying and gelling the experience, because there's a lot of information that happens when you immerse yourself, even for 6 days, six intensive days. So I'll be working with folks up at Copper Country ISD and Finlandia to develop some possible professional development activities after this. We'll be looking at some of the teaching methodologies that we did see, integrated planning, collaboration with staff. We call those professional learning communities here. So what are some of the gamified learning, you know? So there were a lot of
gamified learning.
You know how the kids just are all over Angry Birds and,
yep,
you know, and kids love the gaming. So there's actually, and it's still fairly new in development. And there's not a lot of research out there on it, but they're starting to develop it, is how do we use that, that engagement that students have in gaming and use that to teach and to learn.
We sneak math in there. We sneak grammar in there, or something like that.
And that's what when we went to Hagahelia with the marketing students, they snuck marketing in there, and it was smart feet, and they gamified the learning environment. So that's kind of on the, you know, forefront in developing integrated technology. Project-based learning is another concept that we can build. I had a interesting conversation with a principal, a counterpart, who was involved in developing qualitative indicators to, you know, kind of analyze how your school is doing. And she and I have started emailing with each other. So getting those dialogues going. Also, one of Finland's national objectives is the internationalization of education. So looking for opportunities to continue those relationship building pieces. We talked to Fulbright folks while we were there, and about opportunities for students and for professionals to do exchange over in Finland. So we're looking forward to, by this fall, to have some professional development that has grown from this that we will share across the region.
So everybody gets a little bit out of this. Comfortable kids with their shoes off.
Comfortable kids. Healthy kids.
Did you see a difference between our student population and their student population? Do the kids approach school differently?
One thing that is different when we talk about comparing one system to another system is they have a much more, in general, Finland's a pretty homogenous culture. Finnish kids are pretty much Finnish kids, and there's not a lot of cultural diversity.
Yeah, which is something you know a lot about with a lot of tribal members in your school district. There are two really distinct cultures.
Yes. So, and they do have some schools that have some cultural diversity. I didn't go to that school. Mrs. Vanilla did go to a school that had quite a bit of cultural diversity, and they want to promote diversity. So that's a value there, and they want to promote it, but they don't have, you know, we actually in Berga, we have the assets to promote it because we have, you know, we have a couple of very rich cultural heritages,
yes,
that our students bring to the school and their families bring to the school. So, so you know, that's something that I think they would see as an asset of ours, and that I see as an asset of ours. So, in that sense, that the health, though, I would say they eat better and they exercise better over there. The kids get at least an hour of recess every day. They are outside every day. The preschool, the director of the preschool, we asked about, you know, snow days or when you keep the kids inside from going outside for recess. And she could only recall one day in the last 3 years that the students didn't go outside for an hour of recess.
Wow.
Preschool.
Good heavens. and Finland is not a warm country.
No,
I mean, you know, it's not an area. I mean, it's an area a lot like ours. They have some harsh days.
They do. They are near the water. Helsinki's on the water.
Yeah, so that's a little more temperate there.
It will moderate that. So there was the only time she kept them in was there was a very cold day that she remembered that she kept them in. But they all have rain boots and slickers. If it's raining, they put the rain boots and slickers on. If it's, you know, sunny, they're out. They're out. If it's snowing, they're out. So there's a lot about the physical health of the children. Their school lunch program is also extremely healthy, and it's a free school lunch for everybody. It's not based on need. It's all students receive a free school lunch. All teachers receive a free school lunch, and it's. The day we were in Porvoo, we were fed local halibut that had been locally caught halibut for lunch. The sugar content is low. They serve at least one vegetarian meal a week. And that system is actually not developed by the school at the school. The food service and the custodial and the transportation, that's all part of the municipality. And they come in to the school, but it's not the school that's managing that.
Are all schools run by the state, or are they run by local municipalities?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of local control, and the municipality is like the district.
Okay.
Okay. The state certainly has a large hand in the overall design, but then they hand off a lot to local control. So your municipality will have a board that is an education board, and they will make decisions for the municipality, and those boards turn over also a great deal of responsibility to the building principals and the teachers. So there's clear autonomous responsibility at each level. One question I asked at the Ministry of Education, which was kind of one of those funny moments of, so what do your superintendents do? And she looked at me and she said, well, we don't have superintendents.
Oh no. You're out of work. And you worked so hard to get there.
I could focus on just the principal end of it, yeah. but it, without managing transportation and food service and a lot of those other pieces, you know, that. So I'm sure they have an equivalent, but it may have been not understanding the word. So, and that's where, coming back, I have more questions.
Yeah, because you've got to have somebody in place to take the blame.
When you have those, yeah. You know. But not when your PISA scores are so good. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's somebody has to be there to take the credit. Yeah.
Who pays for the education? Is that paid for mm-hmm. locally, or is that all funded through the state?
Primarily, it's funded through the state. They are also very proud of their welfare state, and that they have a very, very high tax base. Compared to us, although I couldn't give you the figures, So it's primarily by the state, but the municipalities can levy some money to enhance their systems. So most of that financial piece is managed at the state level. They have a very high tax rate. And then some of it can be augmented by the municipalities.
Apparently some kind of schools of choice program. You mentioned a young lady from some miles outside of Helsinki who was in an apartment in Helsinki. So mm-hmm. there must be some portability with this.
Families have choice as to what school they go to, but different from what's, you know, the dynamic that's happening now in our state and our country, and actually many countries right now, is they don't promote choice and they very much discourage competition between schools. It's so choice is there, and but it's not the schools aren't out trying to capture the student body, which is what's really happening here, is we're kind of been put into a competition system. So that is, again, one of a trust issue pieces.
Okay.
I think questioning how much that is taking, that dynamic is taking away from our ability to collaborate with each other. And the researcher I mentioned at the beginning of the program, Posse Solberg, he writes quite a bit about policy and research on the effects of policy. And I would say his position would be that the way we are using choice and test scores and developing this competition between schools is not helping.
All right. And with that, I've got to wrap things up. Okay. Jennifer, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you had a good experience and what wonderful ideas you've brought back. Jennifer Lynn, the superintendent of the Berrigus School District. And that concludes this week's episode of Copper Country Today.